Dhyamana Satkirtihi Shastribhi Suragayakai Pratyashesavabhadhina Hridashinvan Hare Kataha. Matajis. Sabharyaha, along with his wife. Saprajaha, along with his subjects. Kaman, the necessities of life. Bhubhuje, he enjoyed. Anya, from others. Avirodataha, without disturbance. Sangiyamana, being praised. Satkirtihi, reputation for pious activities. Sastribihi, along with their wives. Suragayakai, by celestial musicians. Prati Usheshu, at every dawn. Anu Vadhena, being attached. Hrida, with the heart. Shrinvan, listening to. Harehe, of Lord Hari. Kataha, the topics. Translation. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor, and early in the morning, every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Human society is actually meant for realization of perfection in Krishna consciousness. Pretty strong statement. I'll read it again. Human society is actually meant for realization of perfection in Krishna consciousness. There is no restriction against living with a wife and children, but life should be so conducted that one may not go against the principles of religion, economic development, regulated sense enjoyment, and ultimately liberation from material existence. The Vedic principles are designed in such a way that the conditioned souls who have come to the material existence may be guided in fulfilling their material desires and at the same time be liberated and go back home, back to Godhead. It is understood that Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed his household life by following these principles. It is stated here that early in the morning there were musicians who used to sing with musical instruments about the glories of the Lord and the emperor with his family, about glories of the Lord and the emperor with his family personally used to hear about the pastimes of the Supreme Person. This custom is still prevalent in India. in some of the royal families and temples. Professional musicians sing with shanais, and the sleeping members of the house gradually get up from their beds in a pleasing atmosphere. During bedtime also, the singers sing songs in relationship with the pastimes of the Lord with shanai accompaniment, and the householders gradually fall asleep, remembering the glories of the Lord. In every house, in addition to the singing program, there is an arrangement for Bhagavatam lectures in the evening. Family members sit down, hold Hare Krishna Kirtan, hear narrations from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and enjoy music before going to bed. The atmosphere created by this Sankirtan movement lives in their hearts, and while sleeping, they also dream of the singing and glorification of the Lord in such a way perfection of Krishna consciousness can be attained. This practice is very old, as learned from this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Millions of years ago, Swayambhuva Manu used to avail himself of this opportunity to live householder life in the peace and prosperity of a Krishna conscious atmosphere. As far as temples are concerned, in each and every royal palace or rich man's house, inevitably there is a nice temple, and the members of the household rise early in the morning and go to the temple to see the Mangala Aarti ceremony. The Mangala Aarti ceremony is the first worship in the morning. In the Aarti ceremony, a light is offered in circles before the deity, as are a conch shell and flowers and a fan. The Lord is supposed to rise early in the morning and take some light refreshment and give audience to the devotees. The devotees then go back to the house or sing the glories of the Lord in the temple. The early morning ceremony still takes place in Indian temples and palaces. Temples are meant for the assembly of the general public. Temples within palaces are especially for royal families, but in many of these palace temples, the public is also allowed to visit. The temple of the king of Jaipur is situated within the palace, but the public is allowed to assemble. If one goes there, he will see that the temple is always crowded with at least 500 devotees. After the Mangala Aarti ceremony, they sit down together and sing the glories of the Lord with musical instruments and thus enjoy life. Temple worship by the royal family is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, where it is stated that those who fail to achieve success in the Bhakti Yoga principle within one life are given a chance to take birth in the next life in a family of rich men, or in a royal family, or family of learned brahmanas or devotees. If one gets the opportunity to take birth in these families, he can achieve the facilities of a Krishna conscious atmosphere without difficulty. A child born in that Krishna atmosphere is sure to develop Krishna consciousness. The perfection which he failed to attain in his last life is again offered in this life, and he can make himself perfect without fail. Sabharya sapraja kaman bhubunjain avirodataha sangiyamana sat kirtihi shastribhir sura gayakai pratyushesha vibhadhena ridashrin vanhari katha. Again, the translation. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the principles of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor And early in the morning every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. So this is a description of royal family life. Swami Vivekananda has just completed one of his duties. He's made an arrangement for his very qualified daughter, Devahuti, to be married to Kardava Muni. Personally, he saw to this, and after fulfilling that mission, he's returning to his palace and now is describing the palace life. So we're getting a picture of progressive spiritual life while at the same time fulfilling necessities or fulfilling desires. When reading the purport, I was thinking of some feedback in this microphone. One specific experience in Jaipur. There we go. Okay. Some years back, when the devotees had first established a temple in Jaipur, an ISKCON temple, so it was my first visit to Jaipur. So it's just like Prabhupada describes. Each aarti, any time of the day, 500 or more persons assemble. And just as Prabhupada described, after the aarti is performed, persons will sit in their groups of some locals, some visitors, some pilgrims, and just enjoy life by singing songs in glorification of the Personality of Godhead. So the devotees arranged a lecture program for me at the University of Jaipur. And when I went into the assembly, there was a very large number of people, and I didn't have a clue how experienced they were. I had some understanding because the temple was rather new in Jaipur. Probably they didn't know so much about Krishna consciousness. So to find out a little bit about the audience, I asked them a question. At the very beginning of the lecture, I asked, how many here would agree that the purpose of the Vedas is as follows? So listen very carefully, and when I'm done, I'm going to ask you to indicate if you believe that this is a correct statement. The purpose of the Vedas is to teach you how to live your life in a theistic way so that in this life you can enjoy piously, and after this life you can have even greater facility for enjoyment in Svargaloka or the heavenly realm. How many of you would agree that that's what the Vedas are teaching us? And everybody in the room raised their hand except one person, and it was one of those long narrow rooms, and all I could say is asked, is there anybody that has a different opinion or a different idea? One brave Mataji in an Indian audience in the back of the room raised her hand, and so I asked her, what is that other idea that you would like to share with us? And she said, the purpose of the Vedas is to teach us how we can direct our lives in such a way that we can develop our love for the Personality of Godhead, finish up our business in this material world, and go back home, back to Godhead. And I said, well, you must be reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And she said, yes. So these two are summarizing the path of pravritti and the path of nivritti. And the Bhagavatam, at the very beginning, Prabhupada is in the purports of those first three verses of the first canto, is explaining this Bhagavatam is giving us the path of nivritti mark. And that is progressive decreasing, progressively decreasing one's involvement in the affairs of the material world, while we're increasing progressively our attachment to the personality of Godhead. I don't know if some of you have taken the opportunity to read through Brihat Bhagavatamrita. In this second part, the volume that was just published, this is discussed right in the beginning of the first chapter. Kind of, it's a summary of the whole part two, and in it, Uttara is reviewing the same point with Maharaj Parikshit. As you know, the scene is Srimad Bhagavatam is completed. Maharaj Parikshit gets up and leaves. It's the seventh day. The snake bird is about to come. And Uttara comes weaving her way through the whole crowd of people like any mother would naturally do, feeling she's going to lose her son in just a moment. And so this is part one, but Maharaj Parikshit pacifies his mother by saying, "Don't worry, my dear mother, everything is all right. My mind is fixed upon the personality of Godhead, and whatever happens, I'm ready for it. I'm sure what my destiny will be when that moment comes. Please be very peaceful and contented." So then she says to Maharaj Parikshit, "Well, could you describe the essence of what it is that you heard that has given you such reassurance?" And Maharaj Parikshit replies, "My dear mother, at a moment like this, one normally would not ask such a question or present such an answer, because this is this moment, I should just be, but because the question is so wonderful, I'll respond." And so he narrates in a story form the essence of what he heard. And the essence of what he heard is, in short, that one who receives the mercy of the personality Godhead is one who can be situated like that. And the greatest recipients of the personality of Godhead's mercy are the residents of Vrindavan, and amongst the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis. And that's the essence of what he heard that has given him his reassurance. Then again, Uttara wants to hear more. There must be some special place where these people reside. And she makes some contrasting positions, which directly touches on what this verse is describing. In his commentary, Sanatana Goswami explains that he's going to outline in a narrative form the difference between sakama bhakti and nishkam bhakti. Now, leaving aside, there's discussion about those persons that are just unregulated, meaning they have no basis of action in religious principle, and that's a lot of the world today. But there are persons that do abide by principles of religion. And those that do abide by the principles of religion with the expectation of material elevation, their destination is up to Svargaloka, Bhuvar and Svar, and they just rotate. After their piety is expended in Svargaloka, they descend again, and we read this in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Those, as Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport here, they descend from the heavenly planets, and they take birth in an educated family or a pious family where they can continue. And if they're really fortunate, they'll just directly take birth in a family of devotees and engage in devotional service. So aside from that, then there are different gradations of persons who go beyond Svargaloka. Their objective is liberation. But then there are gradations of those who have the objective of liberation. There are Sakkama persons, which is what is being described here. They have material desires and they want to religiously fulfill those material desires. But they understand this is a temporary place. And it's just preparing myself for that eternal place, back home, back to Godhead. But if one enters into those places, put it the other way around, one cannot enter into those places in an enjoying spirit. One, in the enjoying spirit, you stay in this cycle of birth and death. Liberation is not accessed until one lets go of the urge for worldly enjoyment, even pious worldly enjoyment, as the persons in Jaipur raised their hand almost unanimously saying, that's the purpose, pious enjoyment. Enjoy, but be nice. Be nice. That's what a lot of people think religion is. Probably all of us have had the experience of having people ask, could you tell me a little bit about your teachings, your philosophy? And we say, and they say back, oh, this is very nice. It's very much like my belief. I believe you should be good and don't hurt anybody. And that's what they heard. It's not what we said, but that's what they heard. Piety is the notion that people have. Pious enjoyment with a perk at the end, an upgrade. So the path of liberation is this path of nivritti. And even in the path of nivritti, there's two groups. There's the sakkama and the nishkama. Those that are already nishkama is those that have no attraction and are not looking for it. And sakkama is like here, svayambhuva manu. It's why persons take birth in a very, very elevated position. The progenitors of mankind, as is being mentioned in this section of the Bhagavatam, Kardava Muni offers his respects to Svayambhuva Manu because he's in that category. These progenitors of mankind reside in Maharloka, they're grahastas, and they're not attached to the perks of enjoyment that come from their piety, but they're attached to their religious duties. And they're conditioned by that sense of happiness that comes from their religious duties. And that sense of happiness and the conditioning sense of happiness and attachment to their duties keeps them protected. Like is being explained here. Svayambhuva Manu Sabharya Sapraja Kaman Bubuje Kaman Bubuje. He is enjoying the expectations of happiness that normally would be part of a heavenly personality, but he's above the heavenly personalities. He's a Prajapati. So avirodhata, he's not attached. He's in the position where there's seeming enjoyment, but he's not at all attached to it. Because, and so here's the path of liberation is, he's attached to the personality of Godhead, and he does activities on a day-to-day basis that attach him to the personality of Godhead. And as that attachment strengthens and brings further purification, those subtler forms of desires dissolve. Even the conditioning from the mode of goodness, the conditioned sense of happiness that comes from the mode of goodness, it dissolves. Leaving or awakening further the attachment to the personality of Godhead. And this is the path that the Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing us to. The path of progressive abnegation or the progressive diminishing of material involvements. Now, on this path, there must be these not just high-grade activities or pious activities, because the king, Swayambhuva Manu, is living in the style of a pious king. But he's not just a pious king. He's engaged in hearing the glories of the personality of Godhead. And he's engaged in having others hear the glories of the personality of Godhead. He's engaged the singers in singing, the dancers in dancing, and he's creating the cultural atmosphere so that all classes of people can be simultaneously engaged. And the indication here is also the general populace is also invited to participate in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's the kind of king that Prabhupada would plead with leaders of society to become like, to use the resources of taxation, to create situations so the public can be engaged in acts of piety. Because Amarendra is here, I can remember when he and Balavanta were engaged in the political campaign for the office in Atlanta. I remember one specific question Balavanta was asked, "Mr. Ogle, what do you plan to do for the increasing transportation problem here in Atlanta? There's more and more cars because more of the population is growing here in Atlanta. We can't adequately take care of. What's your plan?" Right? Running for mayor. So his answer was something like this, with his southern drawl. "I believe that we should use the taxpayers' money to engage, to hold huge Sankirtan festivals. So persons can go and chant the holy name of the Lord, take Krishna prasadam, and be fully satisfied, and they won't have the desire to go running around here and there all over the place." Something like that. He wasn't giving an answer so he would get votes. He was giving an answer so he could speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, just as Prabhupada wanted him to do. And surprisingly, he got a lot of votes. Now, I guess there's some people that heard some of what he said, or something. Appreciated he was a very committed religious man. But this is so from the Bhagavatam's perspective, we're getting a sense here of what a pious king does, what a Krishna conscious person who's on the path of liberation does when they have such a post. Again, to take the post of Swayambhuva Manu, instead of having gone straight back to Godhead, means there were some desires, sakama, bhakta. But a sakama bhakta, if they've heard correctly the principles, and they engage themselves according to those principles, that is, just as is indicated here, his life was according to theistic conduct, and he wasn't subjected to any of the involvements worldly affairs that he was doing, because two things: he kept himself within the codes of theistic conduct and didn't act outside, and he was cultivating his attraction for the personality of Godhead. Those two protections were there. Not that, oh, this is because I'm a pious king, I have the license to be fallen and indulge myself in. And within the Bhagavatam, we find a number of examples of this. Maharaj Ambarish, for example, the description of, and then comes later in the ninth canto, his opulence exceeded, not even rivaled, but exceeded that of the heavenly planets. He was so incredibly opulent. But as far as Maharaj Ambarish was concerned, he considered it to be no more meaningful than a stone in the street. Supposing at the end of class we go out and look for our shoes, and next to our shoes there's a little stone. Are we going to get all excited? Here's a little stone. Ooh, I can enjoy. It's insignificant. There's lots of stones, and it's not no big deal. So Maharaj Ambarish considered his opulence like that. And yet he used it. He used his opulence to engage the brahmanas in elaborate yajnas. He even engaged them in karma kanda ritual yajnas that were aimed at pleasing the personality of Godhead, so that in one province that had no rain they could have rain. But what did he do? He was in his temple he was a Krishna Bhakta. And he just for hours every morning, although he was the emperor, he just engaged himself in worship. And he didn't just hire people to go and do the worship, like some wealthy people will do. He did the worship. He cleaned the floor. He did all of the details of the worship to his heart's content, with full confidence that this is the goal of life, and by achieving that goal of life, I can then most perfectly execute my duties as emperor. And because of that spiritual stature, not just piety, but the spiritual stature, plentiful was supplied to him and to all of his citizens. So everyone was happy. What king can say that everyone is happy? So on the strength of spiritual qualification. And so many examples. So the detachment from the fruits of piety, which is a hard thing to come by. It's one of the anarthas that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur identifies, is when one is a little bit successful in spiritual life, one of the anarthas that arises comes from success in spiritual life. That is, from success in spiritual life, then there's enjoyments that one who's not pure in heart may become enamored by. Some recognition for that spiritual attainment, some particular position, some honor and praise, or even worship. And one who becomes the enjoyer of such things, or mind goes to that position, that they become fallen. They fall from that elevated position. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us, I'll just give one other example and conclude the class. The Bhagavatam is teaching us that this is not the goal, this is the means to achieve the goal. What Swayambhuva Manu is doing, he's in the transit lounge. He's passing from the position of attached to detached in a very careful, sequential manner. But you don't make the transit if you become attached to that enjoyment. Just like New Dwarka, it's a very opulent temple. And if one comes thinking, this is nice, comfortable life, marble floor, opulent food, and because it's offered to the deity, very, very nice living, I don't have to work so hard, this is great. That's a mistaken idea. One will slacken in one's submission, and therefore slacken in Krishna consciousness, and suffer and go away or be asked to go away, if that's the mentality. But rather, Prabhupada wanted nice facilities for our devotees so that peacefully, without undue obstacle and difficulty, they could focus their attention on serving the deity very, very nicely, serving the mission of Krishna consciousness very diligently and enthusiastically. And when persons would come to be, they could be attracted by the beauty of the deity worship the opulence of the deity worship, the great diligence of the pujaris attending to the worship of the deity, the enthusiasm of the devotees to perform Sankirtan and our congregational programs. This is our service to the Supreme Lord that will awaken our personal attraction. So one other mention, just make in passing or in conclusion. There's a very, very wonderful and humorous discussion, again in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopakumar is in Brahmaloka, and there's like an istagosti amongst the personified Vedas. And there are different groups of those personified Vedas, different Shrutis, who some are teaching. So one group is teaching, there's an emphasis, and they express it. They're like, more or less like before Gopakumar, who's supposed to be the judge of their opinions. Some teach impersonal liberation. Some teach that liberation is very, very difficult by the process of, by any other process than bhakti. And through bhakti, it's more readily attainable. There's another group where there's emphasis that through the process of bhakti alone can one truly achieve liberation. And then there's another group that just laugh at the whole discussion, thinking they've missed the whole point. The goal is not just liberation. The goal, and there's a Gopal Tapani Upanishad and others that are indicated as very confidential Shrutis. They very clearly know the goal is to awaken our loving relationship with the personality of Godhead. So they don't express that before the others. They just wait for the opportunity when they can be with Gopakumar, and then they share. Because Gopakumar asks, why did you leave? You didn't speak anything. What's your understanding? Srimad Bhagavatam, similarly, is a confidential literature. So many persons recite it. So many persons may read it, but very few persons can understand the very clear message, just like many persons render a translation of Bhagavad Gita, and it's all over the place, their understandings of what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. So the message that we're receiving, this little section, Swayambhuvamana returning to his capital city, going into his palace, and we hear his day-to-day life. He has his piety, but he has his path back to Godhead. And he has his enjoyments with celestial singers and dancers and with his queens, with his children, with his citizens. But because of his singular dedication to the path of liberation, to the path back home, back to Godhead, although he's enjoying in that situation, he and those who are looking to him for his leadership, they're protected to the degree they have mentality like him. They're protected from falling down, falling prey to the enjoying spirit, even the subtle enjoying spirit, in favor of the path of back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada gives us those reassurances in the purport that there's no injunction that one cannot, should not take up family life. In fact, it can be a suitable boat to cross over the ocean of material existence, but one has to put these principles in place and very actively cultivate them. And some nice instructions are given in this section to help understand how we should do that. We don't have the situation of Swayambhuvamana, but we have our temples. And the temples are opportunities for the same type of activities. Now, I sometimes think when giving Bhagavatam class, the persons who should be hearing the Bhagavatam class are in other places. It's a big community, New Dwarka, and so it's important for the whole community to, of any community, to imbibe these principles, understand them very clearly, pick up the spirit of the principles, and live by them. Hare Krishna. See the Prabhupada ki jai. Any discussion? Anyone? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.